Our guest, no stranger to the Paul Breakfast Show, Mr. Afra Raymond. Good morning. How are you? Happy New Year. I haven't seen you in so long.
Well, Steve, it's always a pleasure to be here. As I said to the colleagues earlier on, good morning, gentlemen. But we're taking that chance when we have you in your room. Mm. So we're going to observe courtesies. Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning, listeners.
You see,
it's a pleasure to be on Power 102 Power Breakfast. And thank you for inviting me again to discuss this important
issue. No problem. It's been a while. We had
this
to get
important
to it.
Issue. Yeah. Thank you.
It's been a while. Morning. Thanks for joining us, Afra Raymond.
Morning, Afra.
Yes, Power Breakfast Show. Richard and Wendell. Good morning to you both.
Afra, we have a mutual friend who you need to say good morning to, although it's probably after lunch by him by
now. Yes, Mr. Dennis Nive. Good morning.
He's watching and listening in London.
Watching and listening in London. Dennis is an old quantity surveyor friend of mine. Yeah. So Dennis, a lot of these issues will be bouncing with some of the issues we talked about way back in the day. What was it, 30 years? More than 30 years ago we were studying in England. And these issues won't go away. The issues in the UK and the issues in Trinidad and Tobago. In fact, anywhere large amounts of public money are transacted. Mm. We need to have proper controls to ensure proper accountability, governance, and value for money. So Dennis, I know that you're tuned in and I hope you could spread the word among the UK population on this question. Trinidad and Tobago has made great strides and we need to finish the job.
Well, he actually called me with some good news to say he's coming down next month, February 11th to say. Mm. So he says start organizing because you know Dennis don't sleep, right?
No, he don't sleep. No, he don't sleep.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to his visit when he comes
in.
So procurement legislation, right, that's still to be proclaimed, even though of course the procurement regulator has been doing a lot of work in terms of meeting with agencies, trying to get people aware of what their checklists are. And
we actually had him in here one morning.
So I wasn't there that morning.
Oh, okay.
But Mr. Dookie.
Yes.
No, Munilal Lalchan.
You're right.
Yeah.
Munilal Lalchan. So anyway, Mr. Lalchan. Well, obviously, procurement regulator is doing a lot of work in terms of different agencies to make sure that they have these steps to get ready. Mm-hmm. But the act is still to be proclaimed.
Yes.
So what's your take on all of this, Al?
Well, the point, just a step back a bit. The point is that to go from the act being passed into law to it being proclaimed or operationalized, the system coming into birth, there are steps that needed to happen. And the procurement regulator, who was only appointed 2 years ago, the procurement board was appointed in January of 2018. It was the last official act of outgoing President Anthony Kamona before the current president, Paul Amebix, took office, okay? And Anthony Kamona, former president, appointed the procurement board 2 years ago. So for 2 years, they've been doing the preparatory work to get the organization ready to go into action. And that preparatory work is important. So they need to get an office. They need to hire staff. They've hired all the staff they need to. They've gotten the office. You need to get stationery. You need to get a website. You need to set up a database. You need to train the people in the public sector and private sector people with whom the procurement system is going to have to interact if it works. Mm. Whether you are a person working at Johnson & Johnson, selling pharmaceuticals to the state, you have to interact with the procurement system. And if the procurement system within the state, Ministry of Health, may be acquiring a certain pharmaceutical from Johnson & Johnson, the person in the ministry or the health authority, not West Regional Health Authority, they would have to be trained how to fall within the proper confines of the law. So all of that training took place and so on. What we find ourselves at now, in January of 2020, we find ourselves now at a place where there are two significant changes that are before us. In one hand, the procurement law, the one that is sitting on the books now, if you were to look for it now online, the procurement law now at section 13, subsection O for orange, dictates that the procurement regulator would act as an agent for the state in the disposal of public property. And that is quite simply incompatible with the role of the regulator as regulator.
Yeah.
The regulator is supposed to regulate two things: transactions in public money and disposals of public property. So you can't very well be regulating disposals in public property and you are the agent for the same thing you're regulating, because it's what you call a conflict of interest. As a point of interest for members of the listening public, we had that exact conflict of interest with the central bank and its role as regulator and also being in charge of the bailout. Mm-hmm. You can't be doing both things. The bailout should have been done at arm's length, but it was kept in house, and of course we've had to live with the confusion of the two roles becoming muddled. Coming back to procurement, so the OPR, the Office of Procurement Regulator Regulation, has asked that the Section 13, subsection O, that gives them that duty to act as agent for the disposal of public property, that section be excised. They want to maintain a role purely as regulator. And the government has agreed with that. I agree with that. I think that's good. That's a good move. I think it was an error to include it in the law. It wasn't part of our proposals.
Yeah.
The second thing is where we get into more contentious ground, because Section 7 of the Act, in particular Section 7, subsection 2, creates the powers of the regulator to govern and to have oversight of government-to-government arrangements and public-private partnerships. Those are not two small things. Those are in terms of what the projects that are happening in the country over the last 30 years and certainly over the next 20 years, the largest projects will take place in those two modes. They have taken place in those two modes. Therefore, it is important that proper control and oversight be maintained of that type of contract. And the regulator has actually declared, the Office of Procurement Regulation has declared, that they want to maintain the powers to oversee government-to-government arrangements and public-private partnerships. The Minister of Finance on the 16th of January, which is when he kept his post-cabinet press conference, took a different position and actually said he would be taking it back to cabinet to have that Section 7 amended so that in fact there's less control over those arrangements. And
I think, government to government, particularly.
And public-private partnerships. And I think that's a bad move. I think it's a move that's detrimental to the public interest. And I think that although it is popular sport to get personal with politicians and to get into sort of imbut this and imbut that, that is not really my aim here. I want to say that it's bad law and it's bad public administration and bad management of public affairs if in fact the two largest channels into which huge projects are taking place are subject to less scrutiny by an independent body. And I want to make one final point before you come in, Wendell. I'll wrap up here for now. Is that in fact we need to look beyond the party political thing, which is why I started off saying this is not about me coming out and making a criticism of Mr. Imbert. I'm critical of the position he's taken. Yes, I am. But that's not the depth of the thing. People who would be inclined to support this out of a sense of political loyalty, because they may believe, and they're entitled to, that the PNM is in fact the better party, and the PNM is less likely to get involved in improper behavior around public money and so on. People are inclined to believe that, and on that basis, to give Minister Imbert and his proposals the benefit of the doubt. Those people need to pause and ask yourself, okay, so there's more of you than there is people like us, and the majority rules, and the party you support is putting this law in place that will dilute controls over government to government and public-private partnerships, and you support that. Now, what about when the other party gets into power? Whoever the other party is. The one that's disreputable, the one that's improper, the one that doesn't have any self-control. So we have participated in a system where we slacken the controls over huge parts of national affairs, and in fact that could be to our collective detriment, particularly
if it changes, if the political dynamic,
because it will
change.
It's been changing all the time.
So this
is the point I want to make.
So we need to
look beyond Carl Membert. Although Carl Membert is the person with whom I'm engaging this discourse. This is not about Colm and Colm being a bad guy. No, this is not about that. This is actually about national development, and we need to have a deeper perspective that says, okay, what if? And not what if in any outlandish sci-fi kind of way. But in fact, the way the elections in the country have been going for the last 20, 30 years, next few years you could have somebody else there, you have a different thing to deal with.
But you would think based on history that it will, that during this administration, it'll be more rigid.
Well,
I understand what you're saying.
I don't agree with you. I understand what you're saying. I understand you. That's a widespread perception. I understand you, Wendell. Yeah.
He gave a reason.
Yes.
I just can't remember what it is right now.
I'll tell you.
But he did give a reason.
Good to see you, Paul.
He did give a reason why he felt that the government particularly
I'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that when you come back.
Sure.
Mr. Afra Raymond.
Yes, good morning again.
Before we get back into the thing, Afra, what is the role of the CTB now? Or what will be their role?
Okay, let's talk about that. The Central Tenders Board, which was established by the 1961 Act and started in 1966. It took 5 years to start it. The Central Tenders Board actually acts to invite tenders and assess tenders and award contracts on behalf of ministries and government bodies. The proclamation of the new procurement system, which is the Office of Procurement Regulation, will extinguish the Central Tenders Board. So 90 days after the trigger is pulled to start the whole new system, the old Central Tenders Board dies. So the two things, you're correct, the two things are connected, but that's how they're connected. And the staff in the Central Tenders Board, from what I understand, they have some rights to take contracts within the rest of the civil service or within the procurement regulator. So there's a degree of attention to the question of nobody losing their job.
Right.
So that question has been attended to. The fine details of it, I don't know. Like who got what job and who's moving and who's staying and someone just taking early retirement, whatever. That's a very detailed point that's beyond my interest.
Right. Well, another issue, of course, came up in that someone sent me an article, Morning Noise, that says an article by Richard Kahn that Imbert promises Procurement Act in March.
Yes.
And it reads, one day after members of the private sector civil society group, I suspect that's you.
No, that's not you. That's a group I used to be associated with. That's a group comprising JCC, Chamber of Commerce, Manufacturers Association, Federation of Independent Trade Unions, the Transparency Institute, and the American Chamber of Commerce. It's a cross-party group.
Okay.
Of civil society organizations, which I used to be involved when I was JCC president. So that's not me.
Okay. Yeah. So it says that one day after this group said that they were deeply disturbed by the non-operationalization of the Public Procurement and Disposal of Property Act, Finance Minister Colm Imbert said it is expected to be implemented by the end of March. However, while he said it would be introduced in Parliament sometime in February, it will not be in its current form as the government intends to amend Section 7. I suspect that's what you're referring to in a while ago, right? Yeah. And that what we intend to do, he says, is to make a slight amendment to this clause so that if the government of Trinidad and Tobago enters into an arrangement with another government for the supply of goods and services and there is a conflict between our procurement rules and their procurement rules, their procurement rules will trump. The rules of Trinidad.
Yeah, well, the use of the word Trump is unfortunate. Well, but they're probably indicative.
It doesn't say Trump here. That's my use. He said, and their procurement rules, then the procurement rules of the other sovereign state will apply.
Yes, well, I don't think that's good law, to be quite frank. I mean, I'll just be very direct in what it is I'm saying. What is the point of us going through the exercise, and I'm saying us because the law was developed by the civil society, which is what makes it a unique experiment in public administration. What's the point of us going through that exercise to create this new law, which would address the burning question of proper accountability and value for money with our scarce public money, proper rules for the disposal of public property? What's the point of us going through all of that, getting the law passed in Parliament, and having sat through five successive budget statements by this Minister of Finance, the same individual, Mr. Imbert, now to be told at the 11th hour, hey, there's a problem in Clause 7. Clause 7 that Mr. Imbert has a problem with, that he's outlined in that article. Clause 7 is the same as it's been since it was Act No. 1 of 2015. It was passed at the end of 2014. What is the name of this game? Okay. What is the point for us now? So first of all, we have the late declaration that there's a problem, which I don't find convincing at all. I had meetings, and I'm speaking out when I was involved with the group, we had meetings with American diplomats, British, Canadian, the European Union, the IDB, all of the who's who of international finance and PPP and government to government. Nobody raised any objections. These objections that Minister Imbert is speaking about, I'd like to know where they come from.
Yeah. So what do you think is the sense of wanting to do that, though?
Well,
because what they're saying is
ultimately
that
ultimately a politician wants to have less control over large-scale projects. Let us just put this as diplomatically and as plainly as we can. So the first question, Wendell, let me just treat with what you said in two parts. The first question is a question of when did these objections arise?
Right.
And the second question is a question of purpose. We went through an exercise to put all of these large-scale transactions in public money under proper independent control. You mean to say after we've been through all of that, we are now being told in a democracy, 57 years, 58 years after independence, we are now being told by an educated Minister of Finance, Mr. Imbert is an educated man. He's not a buffoon. We are now being told that, in fact, these are the rules. But if the foreign people don't want it, we can just put our rules aside.
Yeah,
I find that as a citizen and a taxpayer in this country, I find that to be entirely unacceptable. And in fact, I'll say it's surprising coming from somebody with the intellectual pedigree and bravadage of Mr. Imbert. And I can tell you in the background that I have, I'm not aware of any protest or anybody saying this is a conflict, we can't do these projects, that can't work. And I'd like to know where this is coming from. Where is this coming from?
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, we have heard stories about some of these other countries that we've been doing business with.
Yes.
We've heard stories.
Yes, yes, yes.
I mean, I've been to one of those places. I visited one of those places recently, and that was a topic.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of corruption and some of the, how many of those their contractors in that country have
yes.
been hauled over the coals for corruption.
Yes,
you know, so it really is kind of strange.
Well, I mean, I would say to you in response to your point, Wendell, is that there was an article earlier this week. I believe it was Monday morning in the Newsday by the elder and former head of the Public Service Regional Dumas. And it's called The Ghost Returns. I must forward it to you, but it's actually very informative because I'm a critic. I'm making my criticism, and I was part of the group that was trying to put the new law in place. But Mr. Dumas is speaking from a vantage point where, in fact, he was directly involved in government-to-government negotiations and arrangements 40 years ago with the Canadians in 79 and 80. And in that article, he lays out what were the various suggestions and the things that happened along the way and so on. And it's very important reading for people who think this is a minor point or it's an innocuous point. You can't have a system of control if, in fact, the two biggest pieces are going to be under less control or no control.
Yeah.
That's not satisfactory.
Yeah.
And we always got to be mindful of the point I made in the first answer. It may be comforting to some people that PNM is in power now, and they may take some a degree of comfort because of their political loyalty. Just ask yourself, if in 12 months' time another group were in power, would you be comfortable? Because you let this go into law now,
mm-hmm.
there'd be very little grounds to protest then.
Yeah.
You'd be trapped.
Very, very sure.
Leg before wicket, you'd be trapped. Mm. You wouldn't be able to say anything.
Yeah.
So we got to, whatever we're doing, it has to be for national development, and for once, we need to put the party political perspectives to one side and consider what's best for the country.
No.
Do you expect that the procurement legislation will really meet the timeline of March?
It could, because I know from my research and my contact with them that the procurement regulator is ready, except for this one point we're discussing. So the one point is to amend the law, A, to take away the obligation to sell, which the government agrees with, and I agree with that. That's good. That needs to go. And B, the government is trying to get a change to dilute the controls over government-to-government and public-private partnerships, which I don't agree with. That's extremely detrimental. And we would live to regret that for 50 years. We do not need that. We need that like a hole in the head. We don't need it. We don't need it. It's a pretty serious moment. Thank you all for the opportunity to come and
let's take a couple calls.
Sure,
we
can. 222-TALK. You do it so well, Richard. Go ahead.
So 222-TALK, 222-8255, 612-8255. Of course, we're talking to Afro Raymond, and we're talking procurement legislation, which, of course, is scheduled to be proclaimed
by the end of March. According to Minister Imbert.
But, of course, we're discussing the possible amendments and stuff like that. Of course, the procurement regulator has been doing a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I know so many agencies that have met with that agency already.
Yes, yes.
So anyway, good morning, caller.
Hey, morning. Morning, everyone. Well, happy New Year. First time I'm calling in for the year.
Good morning.
And Afro, happy to meet you too.
Good morning.
I'll get to the point. I understand what you're saying, Mr. Raymond, and I respect your view. However, even if we were to amend the law, or leave the law, sorry, as it is.
Yes.
And I agree with you that we shouldn't change it to, if there is an issue, we go to somebody else's law, because it's come like we do have a rule.
That's right.
We see the reality of America, for example, that owes China trillions of dollars. The fact is, when you owe these foreign countries, right, which is one of the things that could go wrong, irrespective of what your law is, they come in and move in and they do what they have to do,
mm-hmm.
irrespective of your law. We've seen it. We owe China. The Jamaicans owe China. And we see exactly what happens. They come in with their nationals and they tell you, listen, we have to do this in your country. We have to get this thing. We have to get X amount of our nationals. So at the end of the day, whether we change the law or not, it doesn't really make a difference when there's a conflict. I'll listen off here.
Thank you.
All right.
No, well, I don't agree with that. The point about it is that we're a nation of laws, we're a republic of laws, and our transactions and our conduct ought to be governed by those laws. The fact of the matter is that we need to have a proper system in place to safeguard our national interest. And let us be quite clear. These government-to-government arrangements are not grants. It is not as if we're a poor country and we have no money and some wealthy country is coming to build 10 primary schools for us. These are loans. We have to pay back the loans. Therefore, it is my respectful and considered view that if we are taking a loan to do something important for national development, we need to have a proper say in how that development takes place, how much money we're borrowing and when we're paying it back and so on, like anybody taking a loan.
All right. We have another call. Good morning.
Good morning, caller.
Pleasant morning to the best part. Pleasant morning, Raymond.
Good morning. Good morning.
Bishop Boy, listen, the politicians will make every imaginable excuse to put this law in place. They have to give out contracts for Toku. They have other big projects coming that people will get kickbacks on. They are not going to proclaim this law. And we have seen that with the licensing of contractors. Imbert lose the bill after Mikey put it in his hand. The last day of the year.
This
he lost it up.
He lost it, yeah, yeah.
He lost it.
Yeah, in the office,
they don't, politicians don't want to put rules that would prevent them from giving friends and families and getting kicked back. They just won't do it.
Victor, is five Fs, you know. Friends, family, and financiers find favor.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, primary school. You said that in primary school.
Thank you.
Thanks, Victor.
Afro, we just have a minute and a half again. Anything you want to add before we wrap up this morning?
Okay, well, I want to thank Power 102, the Power Breakfast, for the support and giving me the platform to make these interventions. I want to urge our citizens to be vigilant on this question. This is not a party political question. Don't be tempted to support it because of your support for one side or the other. Let us look at this holistically as a bigger question of national development. Whatever law we put in place, we have to live with it for the next 40 or 50 years, and it needs to be as solid as possible and as independent as possible. My work is at afroraymond.net, and I thank you for the time.